You know that feeling when you're trying to make a decision, maybe a big one, or even just figure out what's going on, and it feels like the ground's shifting under your feet.
Oh, absolutely. Like you just can't quite get stable footing.
Exactly. So how do you lead then? How do you make those really crucial choices when everything feels so, well, uncertain?
It's such a common feeling these days, isn't it? Whether you're, running a big company or a small team, or honestly just navigating your own life, that constant sense of flux, it can be really, really tough.
Totally. And that's pretty much exactly what we're digging into today. We've been looking at this really interesting document, chapter one, of something called Leading the Flux.
Right.
And it sets things up within this specific company scenario, almost like a little case study. But the problems feel, well, they feel incredibly real for right now.
Yeah, it throws you right in. You've got this leadership team, and they're dealing with a whole mess of stuff all at once. The scene kicks off with the founder CEO, Rohan, and you can just feel the pressure on him. Then his head of strategy, Mira, she's flagging this potential new competitor, AI-powered big media backing. Sounds serious.
Yeah, definitely disruptive.
And then the COO, Aman, he chimes in about their internal problems. Teams not talking to each other, bureaucracy slowing things down.
Dialogue, yeah.
Exactly. And even some senior people apparently dismissing AI, not wanting to engage with it.
Wow, so internal resistance too.
Right. And then you layer on the bigger picture stuff like customers aren't spending as much. The whole situation in Ukraine is still dragging on. It's just a lot.
It really is a perfect storm of challenges, isn't it? And Rohan sums it up so well. He asked that question, how do we lead in this much fog? It's not just one thing, it's everything hitting at once. And that's really the core question for this deep dive, right? How do you actually find a path forward when things are that uncertain?
Yeah, and what's cool about this source is that it doesn't just throw out some, quick fix buzzword solution. It actually dives into a framework that tries to blend some like ancient wisdom with modern brain science. It feels quite grounded. And for you listening, the Akida isn't just theoretical business stuff. It's about getting some real practical insights into how you might find clarity, make better calls when things feel shaky.
Okay, so let's get into it. The document sort of starts by looking at how we usually react to this kind of chaos.
Yeah.
And it argues, maybe controversially, that our first reaction can actually make things worse.
Yeah, that's a key point. It suggests the real problem often isn't the disruption itself. It's more about our own tendency to like cling on too tight to the old ways, the old ideas of security and certainty that maybe just don't apply anymore.
Wanting things to be predictable when they just aren't.
Exactly. The text talks about the amygdala, the brain's little alarm system. When things feel unpredictable, it can just go into overdrive.
Fight or flight.
Pretty much. It leads to this state of hyperreactivity. We start confusing frantic movement with actual strategic progress. You feel this urgency. But the source says often what feels like urgency is often identity under threat.
Ooh, that's interesting. Like we're defending our old way of seeing ourselves or the company, not actually solving the problem.
Spot on. It's that urge to do something, anything, just to feel a bit more in control, even if the action isn't really thought through or helpful long term.
So if just reacting harder isn't the answer, what's the alternative they're suggesting? It sounds maybe a bit counterintuitive.
It definitely is. Instead of just trying to speed up or push harder, the text proposes that real clarity actually comes from stillness.
Stillness. Okay, explain that.
Yeah.
Because that sounds like doing nothing.
Right. And they make that distinction really clear. It says stillness in action. It's not about stopping completely. It's about creating the mental space, the pause needed to actually see the situation clearly before you jump in with reactions.
Okay, creating space to think, not just react. And how did they illustrate this? There was that intervention with the leadership team.
Yeah, the author describes asking them this really pointed question: what feels most at risk right now? Was it, reputation, profit, relevance, control?
And what came out? What were those core fears?
It was really telling. The head of strategy, Mira, she voiced this deep fear of the company just becoming obsolete,
Yeah,
irrelevant.
that's a big one.
And the COO, Aman, he worried about the opposite, almost being too slow, too cautious, and missing the boat completely, hesitating until it's too late.
So fundamental anxieties about survival and relevance.
Exactly, not just surface stuff. And this is where the framework starts to build. They bring in this perspective from Vedanta philosophy.
Okay, Vedanta. For listeners who aren't familiar, maybe a quick primer.
Sure. So Vedanta is this ancient Indian philosophical tradition, and it uses this really powerful metaphor, the screen and the movie. The idea is that your core awareness, what it calls the witness, is like the cinema screen. The movie plays out on, it could be drama, action, chaos, but the screen itself, it remains untouched, unchanged.
Okay, so the screen isn't affected by the movie.
Exactly. So leading from that witness position means cultivating a perspective where you can observe all the turbulence, all the drama unfolding without getting totally swept away by it.
Right, creating a bit of mental distance so you're not just lost in the immediate panic.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And then the source links this ancient idea to modern science.
It does, yeah. It connects it to neuroscience, specifically mentioning fMRI studies on something called metacognition.
Metacognition.
Yeah.
Thinking about thinking.
Basically, yeah. And these brain scan studies suggest that leaders who actually practice observing their own thoughts and reactions, kind of stepping back mentally, they develop better strategic judgment, especially when things are really ambiguous or unclear.
How so? What's the mechanism?
Well, it seems like by intentionally observing, you kind of slow down that reactive processing. The brain shifts gears from just pure threat avoidance.
The amygdala freaking out.
Right. It shifts from that to a mode that's more open, more able to see patterns, spot nuances, maybe identify new possibilities that you'd miss if you were just reacting.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. If you're constantly in panic mode, you're probably not going to spot the subtle opportunity.
Yeah.
So how did this translate into actual changes for Rohan's team? The source mentioned three key shifts they made.
Yeah, three main practical shifts. First one was moving from forecasts to scenarios.
Okay, what does that mean exactly?
Instead of trying to create one single plan based on predicting the future, which is impossible, right?
Right, especially now.
They started developing multiple possible futures, like branching scenarios based on how things might play out with AI or trade or conflict. The key thing was these weren't predictions. They were tools for readiness.
Ah, so not this will happen, but if X happens, we're ready this way. If Y happens, we're ready that way. Building flexibility.
Precisely. Building that organizational resilience and agility.
Makes sense. What was the second shift?
Second was what they called an organizational design sprint. They basically realized their old structure, you know, rigid hierarchy, those silos we mentioned, was actively getting in the way of adapting.
Holding them back.
Yeah. So they intentionally redesigned things. Fewer layers of management, more teams that cut across different functions, and crucially, roles focused more on adaptability itself rather than just hitting fixed static KPIs.
That sounds like a major overhaul, changing the structure to match the strategy. And the third shift, it was about information, wasn't it?
Spot on. They shifted from problem solving to signal sensing.
So signal sense.
Yeah, so instead of only looking at traditional market reports and, you know, analyzing past data.
Looking backwards.
Right. They set up this small, dedicated team. They called them synthesizers.
Synthesizers. Interesting.
And their main job was just to listen. To listen really carefully for those early faint signals from customers, from the market, from geopolitical shifts, trying to pick up on weak signals before they become big, obvious trends.
Like an early warning system, but broader. Trying to catch the whispers before they become shouts.
Exactly. A much more forward-looking, sort of nuanced way of understanding what's happening around them.
And what was the result? Did it feel different? What did Rohan think?
Yeah, the source includes this great quote from him. He said that maybe for the first time, the organization started to feel like a sensing organ, not just a steering wheel.
Wow, that's a powerful image. Sensing organ, not just steering.
Yeah, it really captures that shift, doesn't it? From just trying to control and react to being much more attuned, more awake to the present moment, and better able to sort of anticipate what might be coming.
And this loops back to that Vedanta idea of detachment, right?
Yeah.
But detachment doesn't mean not caring.
Exactly right. It quotes that principle. Be steadfast in yoga, perform action, abandoning attachment to outcome. It's not about indifference at all. Mm. It's about showing up fully, doing the work, putting in the effort, but without being totally crippled by anxiety about exactly how it's going to turn out.
Which, paradoxically, probably lets you make smarter decisions. Less driven by fear.
That's the idea. Wiser decisions, not just faster ones.
So the core message here really seems to be, if your job involves navigating all this disruption, your number one priority has got to be clear vision. And that clarity, it doesn't come from more frantic activity, but from finding that inner stillness, even when the outside world is just nuts.
That's the absolute heart of it. It's a call for leaders, really anyone facing uncertainty, to look inward, mm-hmm. to cultivate that witness perspective we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And the source then turns it directly to you, the listener, with some pretty sharp questions. Where do you usually get your clarity from? Can you actually hit pause when everything's noisy? Are you consciously choosing your response or just, you know, reacting?
Really makes you think about your own patterns. But it doesn't just leave you hanging with questions, does it? It offers some practical things to try.
Yeah, thankfully, it suggests three pretty straightforward exercises, things you could actually do.
Okay, like what?
First, start your day with just 5 minutes. 5 minutes of quiet reflection. Ask yourself, what feels unchanging inside me? What feels still, no matter what's going on externally?
Finding an internal anchor.
Okay. Second, before you go into those important meetings or when you're facing a big decision, just take a moment, literally a moment, to breathe deeply, settle your attention. Remind yourself that clarity often comes from a bit of space, not from rushing.
Just a conscious pause. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the third?
Third, maybe once a week, do a bit of journaling. Write about one decision you felt you made from that calmer, stiller place, and one where you felt more reactive. And just reflect on the difference. How did it feel? What was the outcome?
That's really concrete. Comparing the feeling and the result, it brings it home that this isn't just philosophy, it's a practice you can build.
Exactly. It's about actively cultivating it. And the source wraps up with this really important point about the leader's inner architecture.
Inner architecture, I like that.
Yeah. It basically says, look, redesigning the org chart, shifting strategies, that's all important. But the real foundation, it's the inner development of the leader themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It leaves you with that question, what are you building inside yourself to actually meet the future, which is pretty profound when you think about it.
Yeah, definitely. So wrapping this up, this whole deep dive into leading the flux,
mm-hmm.
it's really highlighted how vital that inner stillness, that clear perception is. It's the bedrock for navigating all this uncertainty.
Mm-hmm. And it cleverly weaves together that timeless wisdom like Vedanta with what we're learning about the brain now to offer this really practical path forward.
And for you listening, hopefully this gives you a different lens, maybe a sense of being more grounded when things feel chaotic. It's a reminder that even when everything's swirling, there is a way to find your center, make good choices. Doesn't matter if you're leading a huge company or just managing your own workload.
Absolutely. It's broadly applicable.
Which brings us to our final thought for you today, pulled right from the source material. It poses this really interesting question. What if disruption wasn't actually something we just have to constantly brace against?
Mm-hmm.
What if instead it was a signal, like an invitation to look inward, to really reevaluate how we're leading our work? Sure. But maybe also just our lives.
It's provocative. Seeing disruption not as a threat, but as a prompt for deeper reflection.
Exactly. It certainly gives you something to chew on after we finish up here.
It really does. And maybe try those exercises. See how cultivating a bit more stillness feels for you in your own situation. This is definitely just scratching the surface of a much bigger conversation about how we navigate change effectively.